Blog Talk Radio.
This is an Open Talk Radio 313 The Flash production.
However and whenever it is you may be listening, thank you for stopping into another fantabulous episode of the Take It Easy radio show, coming to you live on Open Talk Radio 313 The Flash. Happy Wednesday, everybody. I hope you are doing fantastic here today. We have an amazing, amazing show planned for you today. Here over the next hour, we will be rolling along with you here for the next 58 minutes or so. That music gets me so hyped up. We just adopted this music as our podcast intro. So I know, Martez, if you're listening to this, thank you so much for this intro, this beat one intro, because I'm using it on the podcast now. It gets me ready to go when I'm listening to that music coming in. So thank you so much for that, Martez. And ladies and gentlemen, it's a Wednesday afternoon. We got some baseball going on here, ladies and gentlemen. Six games are going on this afternoon. This is kind of that time now of the year where games are starting to happen live over the air. When we first came on Open Talk, we would get like NBA games that were on when they were in the NBA bubble and they had to start games at like 10:30 on a Wednesday. And we got baseball, of course, and then we had baseball playoffs at one point. But now we're back in the baseball swing of things. We went like 3 months without being able to do the, hey, we've got live sports on as we are doing this show. But now we have live sports on, and we have the Yankees and Blue Jays going to either a walk-off or extra inning scenario. That game will finish while we're on the air. The Nationals will finish off the Cardinals. The Brewers will finish off the Cubs, who have been either really good or really bad offensively this year. It doesn't make a lot of sense. You've got the Red Sox beating the Twins in the doubleheader from the game canceled over Dante Wright's death and subsequent protests. If you want to talk on that, Tuesday's episode of the podcast is the best place to go. You can find Take It Easy wherever it is that you find podcasts. We're not going to get into that today. We've done a lot of that so far. It's going to be a packed show also, by the way. And the Royals are beating the Angels as Salvador Perez continues his tirade of going 4-for-4 as the Royals lose 10-3 to the Angels. That was a real thing that happened on Monday. It was one of the funniest things I've seen in a while. Salvador is just a perfect encapsulation of the Royals. It's Salvador Perez, Danny Duffy are the only guys left from the World Series team. And Salvador Perez is just going to go 4-for-4 in the three hole with a bunch of reject players like Michael A. Taylor and Andrew Benintendi. And he's going to end up going 4-for-4 and for the Royals, and they're going to lose games 10-3 against better teams. At least they're trying, but they're going to finish fourth in the AL Central this year. So that's your baseball fix. We'll roll back around there. It's a natural transition here on the radio show to dump in some baseball talk. But we begin our show today, even though we're already 5 minutes into the show, we begin today's show talking about Jamal Murray. And Jamal Murray's story is something that had kind of slipped under the radar. One, I didn't even know Jamal Murray had gotten hurt on Monday. But then finding out Tuesday morning, not only is Jamal Murray hurt, Jamal Murray has a torn ACL. And so let's talk about this from every possible standpoint here as we go forward. Because, again, the NBA is in this weird place where we know the teams that are good. We know who's going to make the playoffs relatively. There's going to be a play-in round, but we know who the good teams are. We know relatively what the seeds are going to be and how everything's going to play out. We're just waiting until now, May 22nd. So there's still 1 month left in the season. We're just waiting for May 22nd for the playoffs to actually commence with the play-in rounds that are going to be kind of awesome. But now we have a league-altering move. And think about the times we've talked about the NBA recently. LeBron James injury, Anthony Davis injury, Kevin Durant injury, Kyrie Irving injury, James Harden injury. These are the only things that matter anymore in the NBA because the regular season is rendered useless, and it has been rendered useless since about the second week in February because we know who the five good teams are, the Lakers, the Clippers, the 76ers, the Nets, and the Bucks. Those are the five good teams. Lakers obviously have to get healthy to be in that list. And then we've got a bunch of second-round exits, Utah, the Phoenix Suns, Denver, Portland. You can go to the East, Boston, Miami. There's teams that are, like, ideally looking for second-round exits. That would be a successful season for them. And then you have everyone else, the play-in teams, some fun teams to watch, tanking teams that have been irrelevant since January, yada, yada, yada. But now Denver loses their second-best player. We'll talk about the MVP conversation in a little bit, but first, from a Denver, like, playoff perspective, even though the MVP is probably more relevant to Denver right now than the playoff run, considering Denver has made the Western Conference Finals within the last 6 months, which is still kind of weird to think about, but even, well, 7 months, I guess, now. Yeah, it's April, so I guess technically 7 months, but no Jamal Murray for Denver is tough for the same reason that the Bucks losing Chris Middleton would be tough in the playoffs, is that Jokic is known, well, first of all, like, no question, Jokic is the MVP of the league, best player on the team. Team runs as Jokic runs. And as we saw from that Nuggets-Lakers series last year, Jokic can take over, but the offense runs better when he's the distributing playmaker. Jokic can go for 45 points and average 33 or whatever it might be. Jokic can do that, but the Nuggets function better over an 82-game season when Jokic is the distributor. It's the same thing that the Rockets were trying to figure out with James Harden is, are we better with Harden as a distributor, or are we better with Harden as the primary scorer who drops 36 a night? Eventually, they got to a point where it became obvious they are better off with Harden being the distributor, or not the distributor, the scorer guy. For the Nuggets, it's Jokic being the distributor. And I'm drawn back to that game two of the Western Conference Finals last year, where the Nuggets and the Lakers were 1-0. Anthony Davis and Nikola Jokic scored the last 22 points of the entire game. Not LeBron, not Jamal Murray, not Gary Harris, not Will Barton, not Michael Porter Jr., not Kyle Kuzma, not Danny Green. Last 22 points of the game scored by Nikola Jokic. I don't know why I said his name like a gringo. Nikola Jokic and Anthony Davis. 22 points to close out the game two that ended in Anthony Davis getting a catch-and-shoot fadeaway three-pointer to down the Nuggets and basically end the series right there. Series went five games. It was over from that point going forward. So Jokic has that performance where in 3-4-minute spurts, Jokic can take over and be that guy, but they're better off with him as a playmaker. The exact same is true with Giannis, that Giannis is not great at creating his own shot, but Chris Middleton is great at creating his own shot. And a lot of what the Nuggets ask of Jamal Murray is to be Chris Middleton. Create your own shot. Be someone coming off of ball screens, catch and shoot situations. Be Klay Thompson, but also be able to create your own shot off the dribble. Like, we are content with you catching passes from Jokic and shooting threes. mean, he's been awesome at this in the past. I remember watching him go berserk in a game 7 against the San Antonio Spurs. This was during their first run, so the year that they got bounced in 7 games by Portland. I remember watching the Denver Nuggets and Jamal Murray specifically just torch San Antonio. This was with DeMar DeRozan. It was a 7-2 series. It went 7 games. It just torched San Antonio. And Jamal Murray had so many of these, like, catch and shoot and dribble to the baseline, or dribble to the free throw line, pull-up jumper. Like, Jamal Murray had so many of these, and that's basically what they asked him to be from that point going forward, and decided that the next evolution of the Nuggets is going to be based on Jokic. The Nuggets go as far as Jokic. And the thing I said all offseason is the one thing that the Nuggets need to fix their team, and obviously Aaron Gordon's been awesome, like I said on our deadline show, the perfect acquisition was Aaron Gordon and the Denver Nuggets. I had literally been saying since last offseason, Denver Nuggets flip Gary Harris, and I said TJ Dozier at the time, but flip Gary Harris for Aaron Gordon. And lo and behold, they flipped Gary Harris and RJ Hampton for Aaron Gordon. Perfect trade. Been a match made in heaven for 2 seasons, and you're starting to see why as you watch them on the floor. But the issue is that Jokic, they go as far as Jokic goes, and the issue with that is when now this year Jamal Murray has a down year. And Jamal Murray has had a down year. Like, this is very much true. Yet we watch Jamal Murray and recognize that he is creating his own shot. And if you've watched a lot of Nuggets games, which I have not this year, the Denver Nuggets have been, you know, kind of middle of the pack, but Jokic's numbers reflect his large amount of win shares because he is a playmaker. They emphasize Jokic as a playmaker in that offense. And so Jamal Murray, from year-over-year statistics, is looking at, well, Jamal Murray, because this is not exactly the most accurate reflection. Like, Jamal Murray played enough of regular season to have his stats reflect what we kind of expect of him. But Jamal Murray, year over year, wasn't a ton of improvement. Like, this year he's averaging 21 points a game. And a lot of people thought that he would make an all-star team potentially. But he's also taking a shot and a half more. He's made, actually, one more three-pointer than he is in the past. And Jamal Murray's been very good this year. It's a big reason why Nikola Jokic leads the league in win shares and absolutely should be the MVP. And he's, you know, same assist numbers, same rebound numbers, same assist numbers, same steal numbers, but they're just asking him, we're going to pick up the pace, take a few more shots, shoot at a slightly higher percentage, take a few more shots. And now you take Jamal Murray out of that offense. It's not like the Nuggets are toast. You just have to now find a way to replicate 21 points a game. If you want to make it as simple as possible, how do you replicate 21 points a game? It's not about how do you win X, Y, or Z games. It's how do you replicate 21 points a game now? Does part of that include Gary Harris? I'm not Gary Harris. Will Barton. They traded Gary Harris. Will Barton is who I meant. They're kind of pretty similar players. But does Will Barton factor into that? If you're the Denver Nuggets, does Paul Millsap start taking a few more three-pointers? I don't think there's going to be one player that totally steps up and takes the mantle. And this is the interesting thing. Remember when the Miami Heat were in the NBA Finals last year? And we were talking about, like, the only way they can come back around in this series is by big game Game 6 Bam Adebayo, or Game 4 Tyler Hero. Like, one of those two is going to have to win Finals MVP. It's because all you were trying to do is replicate scoring numbers. Is that the reason the Heat were able to beat Boston is that Tyler Hero gave them 36 points. Bam Adebayo gave them a 30-point triple-double in Game 6 to close out the series. It's not about winning games. It's about accumulating points. Tyler Hero helped them accumulate points by having the biggest scoring night of his career. Bam Adebayo, 30-point triple-double, game of his life in Game 6 to close out the Celtics. They barely won that basketball game. It's about replicating points. And so this is why the Lakers have always been so interesting over the last 2 years, because their team is obviously so invested in Anthony Davis and LeBron James that they don't have the players in place where, you know, they don't have a third star. But one night it's KCP, one night it's Danny Green, one night it's Kyle Kuzma last year. KCP in the finals really took over. One night it's Rondo, who has 11 assists and scores, you know, hits a couple three-pointers. I guess he never really scored a ton, but he replicated assists, which I guess helps everyone else. And you look at the Lakers now without LeBron and AD, won yesterday. Why? Kyle Kuzma, 24 points. Just increased roles replicate the point production. If you can replicate the point production, your team is going to be okay in the long run. So let's look at the Nuggets, who have not played a game since Jamal Murray's injury. Let's go back to the last – well, I guess Jamal Murray played most of this game. So Jamal Murray had 33 minutes. Let's look at the numbers for the Nuggets at this point. Michael Porter Jr. played 38 minutes, scored 24 points. So you have to replicate the 21 from Jamal Murray. That means you're looking at – you need, by comparison to the Warriors – you need 26 points, basically. You need 26 points when you get to the playoffs. So Michael Porter Jr., let me just actually pull up the Denver Nuggets. Denver Nuggets averages. So you kind of need to replicate 26. And where did I get 26 from? Well, they lost. Jamal Murray scored 17 in a loss to the Warriors. So I'm just picking that one as just a, like, surface-level game, Jamal Murray. So add 4 points there, and then you have to add the 20 points that Jamal Murray lost, or the 21 points Jamal Murray lost by getting injured. And, again, they've been on a win streak recently, but let's look at numbers reflecting the entire season. So Jokic is scoring 26 points per game, and yes, you can get an increased production out of Jokic come a playoff game specifically. Maybe he'll give you 32 or whatever it might be. But you're only, if you need 26 points and Jokic is averaging 26, he's not going to average 52 points a game come playoff time. But maybe he can average 35. Like, let's say Jokic can have a heroic playoffs and average 35 and look like MVP Jokic. Like, let's say 35 or 32 or whatever it might be, but let's say 35. So that would be 9 of your 26 points that you're replicating. So Will Barton has 12 points per game, but he's playing 31 minutes. So let's say Will Barton goes up to 15. Okay, well, that gets you 3 more points. Well, I guess he's technically averaging 13. So let's say 2.5 subtracted from Jokic's 9. Okay, let's round to 11. So that's 11 points. Obviously, Gary Harris is gone at this point. Michael Porter Jr., 17.3 points a game. Let's say Michael Porter Jr. fills the Jamal Murray role, and he's going to average 21 points a game. So 21 points a game for Michael Porter Jr., that adds 4, that gets you to 15. Aaron Gordon's at 11.3. Well, let's say Aaron Gordon goes up to 14.3. That adds 3 points to that. And again, a lot of this is going to be whether Jokic is the type of distributor that we've become accustomed to with Jokic being. So we add those 3 points to the, what, the 15 that we already had, so now we're at 18. Let's go down the list here. Paul Millsap, he's another starter for this team. Paul Millsap is taking like 6 shots a game. I don't know if you want Paul Millsap taking more than 6 shots a game, but he is shooting from the three-point line. Let's see, Paul Millsap is shooting about 39%. So maybe you do want Paul Millsap taking a couple extra shots. So let's say Paul Millsap takes an extra, let's say 2 shots a game. He's shooting, so he makes 1 extra shot a game. So add 2 points to Paul Millsap. So that takes you from 15 to 17, let's say. Let's say that gets you from 15 plus the Gordon 3, 18 plus the 2, so that's 20. You're at 20 points here, and you've got to find 6 points somewhere on the rest of the team. Is it Campazzo? Is it Jermichael Green? Is it PJ Dozier? Like, you got to just find somehow, you got to find 6 points somewhere deep on that bench. Maybe it's JaVale McGee. Who knows? Maybe it's Bol Bol for all we know. Who knows? Maybe someone's going to give them points from somewhere. We just don't know who it's going to end up being on this list. And again, it depends how deep you want your roster to go come playoff time, or, for example, if you want Will Barton to just take over potentially, or whatever they might end up going with. Or Aaron Gordon gets an extra shot or two a game because he's shooting like 57% from the field. So you can work more inside to Gordon, slow things down, and defensively you can pick up some points potentially. But I don't think losing Jamal Murray makes anyone better defensively. It's kind of just a tough break for your team at that point. But looking around here, like maybe Campazzo is going to do something else with a three-pointer here and there. You got to find 6 points or 9 points somewhere on that bench. You got to recoup 6 points from somewhere else if those numbers reflect the way we want them to. And again, this is also asking Jokic to give you like 34 a night. So who's the person who's going to step up for the Nuggets? Because I don't see really anyone like assuming a bigger role and just starting to dominate. I see Aaron Gordon's shot numbers or his field goal percentage going down with an increase in shots. I see Will Barton, who's already, 38% from three-point range, shoots a lot from inside the arc. I don't see that one working out super well. Will Barton is a big three-point guy. I mean, maybe it works out here, but again, we're giving him, four more points a game, five more points a game to combat Jokic's numbers. It's going to be difficult for the Nuggets, no question. And that's just the question you keep looking at here is, are they going to replicate 26 points per game? Can they find 26 points per game out of the, 16 shots that we lose on Jamal Murray? Can you find 26 points somewhere in those 16 shots that Jamal Murray is passing up? And a lot of that might fall on Jokic, which, it's going to be interesting to see. But it's going to take someone deep in that bench to kind of like break through for the Denver Nuggets. Not to be Jamal Murray, but just to break through. It'd be ideal because remember in 2018 when the Celtics were within one game of the Eastern Conference Finals and they had scary Terry Rozier going for like 28 a night at one point in the playoffs. Terry Rozier replicated the Kyrie Irving production by fitting into the Kyrie Irving role, as we came to find out. Scary Terry's actually a pretty damn good point guard. We just didn't realize it at the time, and so this whole Scary Terry thing was, like, shocking to people. And it seems, like, clear in retrospect that that's the best way to keep it going. So find your Scary Terry or do what the Toronto Raptors did when they won the championship – or, I'm sorry, when they lost Kawhi Leonard last year, which was just how can we replicate production with, like – four or five guys, how can we replicate Kawhi's 29 points per game? The way they did it was +7 for Siakam, +7 for Fred Van Fleet, +6 for Anunoby was canceling out Danny Green's subtraction. They had Van Fleet. Norman Powell picked up about 6 points a game, and I forgot where the last person would have been. Would that have been Mark Gasol? No, not Mark Gasol. Oh, Serge Ibaka. Serge Ibaka picked up a few points a game. So that's where they replicated the production last year. So how can you replicate the production if you're Denver now? Now let's focus on the MVP conversation because we talked about this more on the podcast than here. We haven't really had the cliche NBA MVP debate. But Nikola Jokic right now has 0.31 win shares. And by the way, win shares are the statistic that is most conducive to winning the MVP or the quote-unquote eye test, is that 15 of the last 18 players to lead the league in win shares ended up winning the MVP. And some ones that didn't, Chris Paul 2008, Russell Westbrook 2017 won the MVP, I think over, I can't remember if it was LeBron, I think, and then Derrick Rose 2011, that was the other one. So, or I think James Harden was 2017, and 2011 would be D. Rose over LeBron James in win shares because people were just tired of giving LeBron the MVP. Only four players in the history of the NBA have gone over .3 win shares in a season. It's Wilt Chamberlain four times, it's Michael Jordan three times, it's LeBron twice, and it's Jokic this year if he stays above three, which is now in question because of the Jamal Murray injury. So Jokic has the MVP. The last month of the season cannot and should not change the MVP debate. Like, Jokic needs to win this MVP. Like, this year is his great year. He's never going to get another chance to win an MVP. Jokic needs to win the MVP this year. I was listening to Daryl Morey talk about this, and he was saying that supersized five or super skilled fives, they are supersized, but super skilled fives are kind of the next evolution of the sport. It's Embiid, it's Jokic, it's Giannis, even though Giannis is more of a forward, with guard skills. So the point center is kind of the next evolution with Jokic. Embiid does it a little different, but he's just got super skills. And that's the next evolution of the Steph Curry-type offense. It's what if we can get people with forward guard abilities who are just 7 feet tall? And Embiid is one of those that Morey took over. He's like, this is what the next evolution is going to be. And I obviously acknowledge that Daryl Morey is the GM of a Rockets team, or no, of a Sixers team. I still haven't gotten that out of my lexicon. Of a 76ers team that their entire foundation is built upon a supersized five, which is a perfect job for Daryl Morey to take in his transition from Houston to Philadelphia. But the win shares don't lie, and Nikola Jokic is the MVP of the 2021 season. And the last month of the season, or the last, what, 5 weeks of the season that we're at right now, technically the last month, I mean, the regular season ends on, like, March or on May, like, 19th or something. So technically, like, the next 35 days, so the next 5 weeks should not and cannot determine who the MVP of the league is, even if we're trying to break the tie that doesn't exist. Because I ask you, who is even close to Nikola Jokic right now? Who's even close at this point? Because the only names I could throw out that are even in the conversation of second place would be Embiid, and it would be like James Harden and Giannis. And Giannis is probably number two, if we're being quite frank. So if we're giving it to Embiid, what are the merits that put him over Jokic this year? Is it his less than 0.04, his 0.04 win shares less than Jokic? Is it his points per game numbers, which, by the way, are pretty much comparable to Jokic at this point? Let's see Joel Embiid's numbers here. Joel Embiid is 29 points a game, more points per game, 11 rebounds, same as Jokic, 3 assists. Jokic has 8 assists a game, and Jokic has 26 points per game, for those who are wondering. So is it Embiid's numbers that put him ahead of Jokic at this point? Is it the wins that put him ahead of Jokic, which, by the way, the 76ers are probably going to be the 3 seed by the time the playoffs roll around, compared to the Nuggets, who might be the 3 seed, but will probably be like the 4th or 5th seed come playoff time in the West. You know, it is pretty, pretty clear that the Denver Nuggets, with the 4th best offensive rating in the league, mind you, the Denver Nuggets are the best, not the best. They're the, this is tough. They're kind of, they're in that second group, but I guess Utah is right up there with them. It's going to be an awesome series when they play Utah, if they play Utah in that 4-1. I really hope that those two meet up in the second round. But the Nuggets are one of these really good second-round exit teams. And Jokic is the MVP, which makes it even more interesting that they are this version of themselves. And Denver, I commend you. Jokic is absolutely the MVP. They might just get a poor luck of the draw here, which is going to be kind of unfortunate for the Denver Nuggets, depending on how this thing falls. But again, like I said, the last 5 weeks of the season cannot determine the outcome of the MVP race. And even Jamal Murray's injury, even if they can't replicate the 26 points we were talking about earlier, even though we found that they could get like 20 back, even if they can't replicate all 26 points, and 6 points is a huge difference here in the NBA circles, and you're asking a lot of people, even if you're giving them extra shots, you're still asking a lot of Michael Porter Jr. to increase his output, Will Barton to increase his output, and Aaron Gordon to do his job, and Paul Millsap to hit another extra turnaround jumper, and Monte Morris to hit a shot here and there, and for Facundo Campazzo to hit an extra three-pointer left or right. And it's asking a lot. Like I said, the easiest way to go about it is the Terry Rozier way. Just have one dude that goes from averaging like 7 a game to 28 a game. That's the easiest way to replicate your point production. But if you're going to do it that way, it's going to make life tougher. So even if Jokic dips below 0.3 win shares and he doesn't meet Wilt Chamberlain or LeBron or whatever, and he's more like Giannis of the last 2 years, because Giannis is win shares, I think the second MVP season, he was like 0.298 or something like that. And because the Bucks were far and away the best team in the league, like they were on pace to win like 69 or 70 games last year, had the pandemic not kind of neutered their season, like because they were just so far and away the best record, no one had an argument other than LeBron about Giannis being the MVP. But this year, the only thing that's keeping them down is the wins. And again, I've been trying to talk about wins don't matter. It's the amount of points that you are generating. People are playing the wrong game if they are playing the record. It's about how many points you are able to generate is the number that we should be looking at here. And again, like I said, if the Nuggets are looking to get to 27 points, well, Denver could do that by improving their defense from what is right now the 9th-ranked defense in the league, according to, what is this, defensive rate. Oh, sorry, no, defensive. Sorry, opponent points per game, they are 9th in the league. But their defensive rating is 17th in the league. Wow, so they're lucky defensively this year. That's actually telling for trying to evaluate. If they're 9th in allowing opponent points per game, but they're 17th in defensive rating, that means the Nuggets are a lucky team. But anyway, they're 17th in defensive rating. So maybe they pick up the defensive side, and that's how you chip away at those 26 points a game. It's entirely possible. This is obviously the real scenario to getting back those 6 points is, you know, you can hold the other team to 106 instead of 110, and you're doing much better than it would seem. And they're obviously their net rating is 4.9. They're scoring 115 points a game. They're giving up 110. So they're like 6th in the league in net rating of points per game. Or points per victory, I guess, but it's not technically a victory. It's just if you add up, it's just a mean. If you add up all points scored and all points allowed and then divide it by the number of games played, you get 4.9. And the Nuggets, that would put them 6th in the league, which, to be fair, I mentioned the 76ers, the Bucks, the Nets, the Clippers, and the Lakers are the 5 teams in that elite category. That would technically put the Nuggets at that net rating that makes them the best team in the Western Conference. Or, I'm sorry, not the best team in the Western Conference. The best team of those second-tier, like, rooting for second-round exit teams. So, you know what? Maybe things work out really well for the Nuggets. I don't know. As I was doing that exercise, I'm thinking, yeah, they're going to probably need, like, I don't know, Monte Morris or P.J. Dozier to just have a magical breakout series where they, like, score 22 points a game. But because even Michael Porter Jr., like, going off and having 25 a game, it makes it easier for everyone else, but it's not enough on its own to make the huge jump. If you just keep the offense rolling and plug someone else in for Jamal Murray, and that person fills the Jamal Murray role the way that Terry Rozier filled the Kyrie Irving role, well, then your life gets to be so much easier because you can replicate what you've already been doing. I don't look at the Nuggets, I'm like, yes, P.J. Dozier is going to be Jamal Murray in the playoffs. I don't necessarily see that, but not saying it's impossible. Still believe in the Nuggets. And again, the alternative is what? They get bounced in the first round of the Lakers? Well, you can take Jokic's MVP, walk away, and say it was just a bad luck. And to be honest, does anyone think the Nuggets can be a championship team? I probably think more than the common person the Nuggets can be a championship team. Without Jamal Murray, it's a lot harder to envision, but Miami made it to a championship last year. So never say never, I guess. Denver's kind of comparable to that Miami team last year when you look at them right now, except Jokic is going to walk away with the MVP. I was just talking about, like, in net rating. Offense is, like, top five in the league, as Miami's was last year. They play good enough defense in Miami. Obviously, Miami's big key was having Bam Adebayo, too, and it's still a big deal for them. Like, let's see what Miami's defensive rating is here. Got the old stat pad up here. Let's see what Miami is. Miami is sixth in defensive rating, but this year they're 25th in offensive rating. So Miami is just holding on by the edge of their pants at this point because they're playing great defense, but they're not really scoring at all at this point. So that's not really going great for them. But it's going to be interesting. It's going to be interesting to see that. And Utah. Like, let me look up Utah real quick because Utah is in this interesting place where Utah is, what, yeah, first in the league in net rating because their offense and defense are both top five in the league right now. So Utah is in this interesting place where they've probably got the deepest eight in the league. The eight that they're going to put out on the floor, which at this point in the season, that eight is Donovan Mitchell, Rudy Gobert, Bogdanovich, Mike Conley, Joe Ingles, Jordan Clarkson, Derek Favors, and Royce O'Neal. Those guys, and Royce O'Neal is technically starting for them, which I didn't even realize that Jingles comes off the bench, which is what I call Joe Ingles. But I guess it makes sense because Royce O'Neal feels like that Nick Batum role where he's like the fifth option when all those guys are on the floor together. But Ingles gets less minutes as like a seventh man, and Jordan Clarkson's giving you 17 off the bench, and Ingles is giving you 12. And Derek Favors, although he's not a huge scorer, Derek Favors can come off the bench and give you pretty significant minutes when you talk about, you know, he defense is the name of his game, but shoots exclusively two-pointers. I don't think – has Derek Favors taken a three-pointer this year? Derek Favors has not taken a three-pointer this year, which you know how damn rare that is in the NBA at this point. Utah is good, and two of their eight players that I think are like the deepest eight in the league, but they just don't have enough star power at the top. As great as Donovan Mitchell has been, he gets better every year. He's averaging 27 this year. As great as they are right there, like Joe Ingles is coming off the bench and shooting like, what, how many three-pointers? Like five, and Jordan Clarkson shooting eight three-pointers. They have two dudes that are shooting no three-pointers. It's Rudy Gobert and Derek Favors have not taken a three-pointer like the entire season. It looks like Rudy Gobert had like one half-court heave. That's been it for the entire season. It's just ridiculous. They neither have made a three-pointer all season. They're two of the big eight guys in their lineup. And then Georges Niang, I said Lucas Niang, he's the NFL player, but Georges Niang gets in there now and then, and you've got Ersan Ilyasova still just chilling out down there. Just chilling. Chilling with his 2 points a game and just hanging around in the NBA at this point because you can always use an Ersan Ilyasova come playoff time. You never know when you just might need an Ersan Ilyasova moment. But Utah is interesting. Again, Utah has been really good, and they're better than Denver. That's why I paused when I said, like, they're the best of this, like, second tier. Because Lakers healthy or unhealthy changes things because the Lakers are going to probably go through the West. But Utah is right there. Utah could make a conference finals run. Unfortunately, they might draw the Lakers in the second round, which is going to remind me of those 2018 Toronto Raptors. But it's going to be so damn interesting to watch it play out for the Utah Jazz. It's going to be so interesting. And by the way, they're selling like best in the league in attendance, which is what happens when you have this amazing team and a city that's already open from COVID. So that was fascinating, how good Utah's been. From the Denver side of things, it's going to be interesting. Where's the Miami one? I was looking at Miami before. Yeah, Miami, this is what I was thinking. Seventh in offensive rating, 11th in defensive rating, and they had a +3 net rating overall, which was seventh in the league. And we just talked about the Nuggets. The Nuggets were sixth. This Nuggets team is basically like a mirror reminder to me of what the Miami Heat were last year. which probably means they're like a second-round exit. And that's kind of where Denver's looking at right now, is they're like the fourth team. But then again, you've got the Suns, which are in this interesting place, and the Lakers are just kind of holding on for dear life to see how this one's going to work out. But Phoenix is in this interesting place where the Suns are, at this point, what, second in the league in net rating? And their defense is fifth, offensive is seventh. I think they could probably get bounced in the first round by someone in, on the upset category. But Devin Booker is playing very similarly to Donovan Mitchell at this point. And I technically don't believe in either of them at this point, but it'd be fun to watch him play a playoff series. That one I can say for sure. So that's going to be interesting, too, because I do like Phoenix, but not – like, these are all second-round exit caliber teams, and a lot of it has to do with just who's your best player? Who's your best player, and are they better than the other team's best player? Because the Lakers, when healthy, have two players better than anyone on the Jazz or the Suns, and both teams have been remarkably healthy so far this season. Chris Paul's played 53 games, Bridges 54, Devin Booker 50, DeAndre Ayton 54. Like, they've been remarkably healthy for most of this season, which is how you get to this place, is when everyone's playing every night. So, good luck to the Suns. I think they are very much candidates to get bounced early, mostly because nobody has playoff experience, but they've had an awesome season so far. And again, a second-round exit is a victory for the Suns. Second-round exit is a victory for this entire season if you're Phoenix. It's going to be a huge, huge victory if you can get just to the second round of the playoffs. Because I mentioned those second round exit teams earlier, and I know we were going to talk NFL a little bit, but I'm kind of just going down this basketball rabbit hole here. We talked about these second round exit teams. We talked about the Phoenix Suns. We talked about Utah, Denver. If you go to the East, Miami, Boston. These are teams where ideally they want to get bounced in the second round, but not everyone is going to make it to the second round. Because I mentioned five teams right off the bat there, and I can throw Portland in the Western Conference. Like, Portland could knock off Phoenix real easy in that first round. They've just been injured the whole season. And they might get a 7-2 matchup or a 6-3 matchup, depending on what happens with the Clippers. What's interesting about that is that I listed six teams right there. And then I said five teams are elite, can win a championship. Clippers, Lakers, Bucks, Nets, and 76ers. 76ers are fading, but they're going to get an epic series against Milwaukee in that 2-3 in the East. So those five teams are trying to get to the conference finals. Like, I talked about this in the East really months ago, but it's still true now. Someone between Milwaukee and Philadelphia is not going to make it past the second round. And you think that they're ready to hit the panic button if one of those two teams with that roster construction doesn't make it past the second round? There's going to be some panic going down between those teams for the one that doesn't make it out of the second round. Then we go to the next teams who are fighting to make the second round. So we had five at the top there, which means that you're fighting for three spots. In the West, four teams fighting for two spots. And in the East, two teams fighting for one spot between Boston and Miami. And there's still a scenario where, like, Atlanta or Charlotte has, like, their championship-type run and makes the second round before getting swatted in the thin air by Milwaukee. That's entirely possible. But in the Western Conference, you're looking at, if we are assuming that the Clippers and Lakers will make it to the second round of the playoffs, that means you're looking at, again, this is also assuming that the Lakers are healthy. The Lakers are not healthy, they will not, they have no chance. You have no chance even if you just have one player, no chance. So assuming both of them come back, so then you have four teams, the Utah, Denver, Portland, Phoenix, fighting for two spots. And some of them might meet up, like in an ideal world, they'll all meet up early on. And Utah is probably going to get the coast is clear because they're going to play some 8 seed as the number 1 seed. And Phoenix might be clear too, which would be a tough break because then we'd have to have, like, the Clippers against Portland the way it stacks up now. You'd have to have the Clippers play Portland, and then you have to have the Lakers play the Nuggets, which is just a tough luck of the draw if you're Portland or Denver because those are second-round matchups that happen to be in the first round. It's what happened to who was the team last year who lost to the Lakers? Portland last year. They just got bad luck of the draw, and they got bounced in the first round because they got a matchup against the Lakers when that probably should have been a second round matchup. I view last year's Portland team in that way, like context matters. Portland was a second round exit type of team that got bounced in the first round because of bad luck to the draw. And lo and behold, CJ McCollum gets hurt, Yusuf Nurkic gets hurt, and the Blazers have to get the same situation where they are getting bounced in the first round by a team that is probably a second round exit because they just have to draw the Clippers. If they draw the Suns, whew, that's going to be a seven-game dogfight if you can get Portland versus Phoenix. That is a seven-game dogfight if you can get that one playing out. But I digress from that. It's going to be interesting to see how the seedings draw out, but again, just think of it in that context. If the Lakers and Clippers are very much in the clear, and the Lakers and Clippers are your two top seeds who are guaranteed to make the second round of the playoffs, that means you have four teams fighting for two spots: the Jazz, the Suns, the Nuggets, and the Portland Trailblazers. And then in the East, if you guarantee me Brooklyn, Milwaukee, and Philadelphia will make the second round, which is pretty much a guarantee at this point, then let's throw back, who's that fourth spot? Who's fighting for that fourth spot? It's Boston, it's Miami, and there's a hodgepodge of teams that just making the playoffs or making a seven-game series and getting bounced by Philadelphia, Milwaukee, or Brooklyn would be a huge success. And for a lot of other teams, you know, making it to the wild card round, as I like to call it. I know it's like a play-in tournament, but the wild card round is a huge success for them. And Boston and Milwaukee are the team, Boston and Miami are the teams that expect to be in that second round, or at least they've had the expectation to be in the second round. And again, they're fighting for one spot. One of those teams could get it. And maybe in the end, the spot gets stolen by Charlotte, Atlanta, not the Knicks, even if you want to believe the New York Knicks. It's not going to happen. Indiana, even though Indiana exists to get swept in the first round of the playoffs, that's basically Indiana's entire MO, is get the fifth seed, get bounced in the first round. This year they're going to be a play-in round and get bounced in the first round if they win that play-in round. Maybe one of those teams pulls off the upset in the Eastern Conference. Who knows? But anyways, Miami and Boston are the two who should expect to be there. I know Boston's kind of had a tough stretch of things recently. But Boston, you have to expect, because you have two All-Stars, you have to expect that you're going to be in that position. And now that they jumped back to fifth with a win streak, and the Heat bounced back with a win streak of their own, like the Hornets, the Knicks, the Pacers, they're kind of fading in the background, and things are sorting out the way we kind of all expected them to sort out. Toronto, tough break, just tough breaks all around. I kind of knew that you guys were going to be bad, but I didn't think it'd be this bad. Anyway, the point being, after this long and treacherous road, is that just look out for two spots for one in the East and two spots for four in the West and one spot for two in the East. And maybe Trae Young crashes the party and I can start celebrating and saying, I told you so, I told you so, I told you so on Trae Young when he pulls up to the second round. Maybe that will be my fate. All right, we got about 10 minutes left here on Open Talk Radio 313 The Flash. Let's do our natural transition back into baseball scores. Boston Red Sox, great start to the season. Good for them, I guess. We'll see if it stays up, but let's see what happens. Yeah, Royals are going to get the win. Padres don't start for a while. It would have been more fun to watch a Padres game live on the air. That would have been interesting. Blue Jays did, I've mentioned it off the bat, we were either going to get a walk-off or an extra innings. Blue Jays walked it off in the ninth inning against the New York Yankees. Did it say how they ended up winning the game? Was it a home run? Might have been a home run. Maybe Bo Bichette. Good for Bo Bichette. Yeah, looks like he might have hit a home run there. Good on Bo Bichette, or maybe Alejandro Kirk, I don't know. Looks like something good happened to the Blue Jays. And Brewers closed out that victory. Red Sox still working that one. And, again, Kansas City and Salvador Perez. Let's see if Salvador Perez did something interesting today. Yes, perfect Salvador Perez. 2 for 4, drove in 2 runs, scored twice. Carlos Santana looks like he hit a home run. Yeah, starting to looks like the Royals, I was laughing about this. Kansas City's got, like, just a hodgepodge of, like, former MLB players who were really good, but now they're just kind of irrelevant. Like, you go, Benintendi. Everyone remembers him from Boston. He'd been great. Carlos Santana, former great. Jorge Soler hit 48 homers in a season, but also never hit more than 12 other than the 48 home run season. Gerard Dyson, who has one of the most amazing, spectacular catches I've ever seen in the sport, if you Google Gerard Dyson catch. Michael A. Taylor started as in center field for a World Series team like 2 years ago, and here he is chilling on the fourth place Kansas City Royals. Didn't think I'd talk so much about the Kansas City Royals this week. Maybe we'll talk even more about the Kansas City Royals. Hunter Dozier, he's got a big contract extension, so good for him. And then they just have no pitching. That's kind of where everything falls apart for Kansas City. He's got a top 20 offense and just no pitching. Tied like about a middle of the road offense and just garbage pitching staff. So good luck to you and good luck to all of those magical Royals fans. All right, well, here's a quick NFL update here. I mentioned it in the top of the show, so we might as well. Yeah, Bo Bichette, walk-off homer. Nice. Here we go right off here. So Jadeveon Clowney is now officially a Brown. It's funny, I had talked about this. I had talked about this on Take It Easy's podcast on Monday. I did 8 minutes on Jadeveon Clowney signing with the Browns, which is ironic because we have 8 minutes left in the show right now. But I've used these 8 minutes on the podcast already. But now he's officially a Cleveland Brown. $10 million, 1 year is what the contract looks like, which is slightly less than what he got in Tennessee, which I guess makes sense because he was slightly less than the player Tennessee expected that they would get. This crazy Aaron Donald story is in there that they someone got beat up. This is the one that's just kind of trending across the internet right now. It's just Aaron Donald beat someone up, and that guy got like a giant bruised eye all across his face. Feels probably going to get settled out of court, but the story itself is fascinating and fills a void in a lot of people's lives in this verse of needing content at this point. Aaron Donald has very much filled the void because he has gone trending on Twitter as everyone starts to analyze find content. It's always a race to the content. I know this right now as we look to maybe start forming a media empire here or a media company. It is really deep, really much like a fight to get to the content. Like, let's get to the content as fast as we can possibly get. And everyone is galvanizing to Twitter and using Twitter as a great way to pick up some. I'm just going through some more Aaron Donald stuff. There's a lot of content coming out here on the good old IG and the Twitter. Everyone's on a race to the content. But I guess it's kind of a story for people to follow here. Running around the NBA real quick, what else happened here? I guess we kind of had that interesting story with, Julian Edelman, because he's retired, but no one really knows if he's retired. It's kind of this weird purgatory right now that he finds himself in. So I guess we'll see. I mean, we talked about this on the podcast yesterday, too, about Julian Edelman and the thing that we do because of emotional connections to sports where we elevate people a little bit. And it seems like Julian Edelman is retired because of injury. Like, I watched his little Foxborough Forever 3-minute thing that he did where he officially announced his retirement, that the wheels had kind of fallen off because of his injury. And the Patriots failed him in his physical to cut him, which also, you know, was a salary cap thing, which, well played, Patriots, well played. But, yeah, it seems that the injuries have piled up, but the injuries piled up on Gronk, and he came back, and everyone connects that. It's the easy way to connect things. But, hey, we've seen this before, so now we're going to infer from what we already know. But if it is medical, then I expect Julian Edelman will stay retired, but I don't know Julian Edelman. Julian Edelman doesn't know whether he's going to stay retired or not. What I would be doing is guessing. and guessing is gasbagging. And that's kind of what we do on Sports Talk Radio, gasbag about Julian Edelman, right? Me guessing is the equivalent of my gasbagging, and this is being a professional gasbag at this point. So with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for stopping into the Take It Easy radio show here on Open Talk Radio 313 The Flash. We are going back to back this week. We'll be back again tomorrow for another amazing, fantabulous episode of the radio show. Again, download, rate, review, subscribe to the podcast everywhere it is that you get podcasts, as well as checking out Open Talk Radio 313 The Flash on Facebook and Instagram. And so with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, take it easy. We'll talk to you again tomorrow.